This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. What kind of family culture did you grow up in? What kind are your children experiencing? Every family's different, of course, but when it comes to family types, new research shows there are four basic subgroups in America. They differ in such things as importance of religion, value of education, optimism about the future, strict rules and discipline, and not nearly so strict. Were any of those characteristics important in your family? Want to guess what that says about your family culture? Well, you don't actually need to guess, because two of the Virginia sociologists who developed these new findings are here to fill us in. And once they do, if you have questions or some stories to share about your most important family experiences, you'll be invited to participate too. It all begins right after the news. Great to be with you. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. So, what kind of family culture are you in? Are you part of the faithful, or perhaps the engaged progressives? Maybe you are instead among the detached, or could it be that you're part of the American dreamers? Well, it might be difficult to answer that question until you've heard more from the researchers who've identified what they see as these four major dynamics in U.S. families. So we will meet two of those sociologists in just a moment. But as always, if you find you have questions or a story of your own to share, you are invited to join us at 888-WMRA-TALK. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. The new report comes from the Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture at the University of Virginia. It is titled simply, Culture of American Families. And here with us from the Institute to explain, Carl Bowman and Megan Julfs Swanson. Thank you both for making time for us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So we'll get to more on each of the four categories in a moment. But first, Dr. Bowman, if you would tell us how you and your colleagues came to do this research, what were you trying to find, and why?
Well, the Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture has been around at the University of Virginia for a couple of decades now. And we have many things that go on there. But one of the things we focus on in our research is the moral development of the child. And we have scholars from across the UVA campus that write essays on this topic, and we have seminars that focus on things like this. But we hadn't done empirical investigation, actually going out and finding what families are doing and how do they work at this. And so we decided to launch that investigation, and it consisted of both a national survey that was done over the web and a face-to-face interview study that was done nationwide. And we were asking about a lot of things that aren't typically asked about in parenting studies.
A lot of parenting studies, you know, focus just primarily on what do parents do in disciplining their kids. And we wanted to step back from that and be like, okay, what is the whole home environment in which kids are raised? You know, as my mom used to always say, that more is caught than is taught sometimes.
So, oh, wait a minute. Repeat that for me.
That my mom always used to say that more is caught, that kids catch more than parents actually sit down and teach them. And so we wanted to get a sense.
The kids are picking up on
what's
going on.
They're picking up on everything that goes on around them
that their parents may not even be aware of.
Exactly. Okay. You know, there are times when my brother would be like, oh, this is tradition. And my mom's like, well, it was? That was a tradition? I didn't remember that. And so we wanted to kind of get a sense at some of those bigger things because, you know, what parents think about politics influences their kids pick up on that. And that influences the way their lives operate or the way parents think about religion or some of these other really big things or the way they celebrate holidays makes a difference in the lives and ways parents interact with kids.
Or if they put photographs of their kids on the fridge.
Or Facebook.
Or if they come home and they don't talk to their children at all, and they sit down in a chair in front of the television, and that's the way they spend their evening. This is all part of family culture. It has much to do with the environment in which children are raised. And so we were going after the family environment because that's the first and most important environment that kids are facing.
It seems to me from what I've read of your report that you really are not, at least yet, at the stage where you're speculating how children raised in these cultures will be affected by them as they grow into adults. This is just sort of kind of a first stage of identifying what these different types of American families are like.
Exactly. And we can't do too much based upon our data so far with what is the impact upon children, because we have data from parents. That's what this study is grounded in. And it's not that having the data from children, you know, would be unimportant. It would be very important, but we simply can't say that at this point in time.
Well, I will ask you more in a little bit about just how you collected this data and what kinds of questions you asked and what you thought the significance of the answers might have been. But first, tell me some about these categories. I guess you've got the detached as one category, the engaged progressives, the American dreamers, and the faithful. Who wants to pick one and go first in explaining what it is?
Well, I want to talk about two of them.
Okay.
Because these groups are sort of defined in terms of each other. And the faithful and engaged progressives, broadly speaking, are opposites. That's a simplification,
Absolutely. But
broadly speaking, that's the case. It's sort of a red parenting versus blue parenting, you know, and very different family cultures in those situations. So with the faithful, God is really a central focus in those families. This is 20% of all parents in the United States, and they don't just go to church and say they believe in God. They talk about God with their children. If you ask them, what's your primary purpose in parenting? It's going to be to raise their children according to God's will. They place things related to faith at the end of the day above their kids' happiness, above how well their children will do, you know, and vocationally when they grow up, and above many other things. So the faithful had that kind of moral orientation, moral anchor, we could say. And that's what we were looking at in this study, the moral bearing or compass of different groups of parents. Engaged progressives, on the other hand, it's a group that's whiter than any of the other groups. It's a group that looks to themselves for their moral grounding and how they raise their children. This doesn't mean they don't care about morality or that they're only thinking of themselves in narcissistic terms. But what it means is they look to themselves. They see responsible choices as being very important for adults and for children. And so part of their responsibility as parents is to, in a free world in the United States of America, to raise their kids to be responsible choosers, to give other people the latitude to choose for themselves, to be tolerant of the choices that people make. And so there is a moral code. Some would like to write the progressives off as not having a moral code because it's not grounded in God. There's a moral code there, too. It just has a very different anchor than the code for the faithful. And engaged progressives were 21% of parents nationwide, so essentially the same size as the faithful.
The other two groups, the detached and the American dreamers, they share a lot of really similar kind of demographic characteristics in that they have lower levels of education, they have lower levels of family income. They're kind of, you know, they're a lower level than the engaged progressives and the faithful, but the ways they go about parenting are radically different. The detached are very much kind of a, you know, a hands-off, let kids be kids, whatever kind of comes will kind of come. And they really tend to place their hope in luck or in fate. They hope that their kids will do something really great, but they're not actually going out of their way to try and accomplish that. They're hoping that maybe they might become a baseball star or something like that down the road. But there's not a whole lot that they're doing to cultivate that. The American dreamers, on the other hand, this is the one group that is primarily minorities, both African American and Hispanics. And they have this sense of, my kids are gonna have a better life than I did. They're about 3 out of 10 parents in America, just less than that. And they are they work with their kids and try and instill values in their kids and want their kids to have, you know, the better life that they never had. And so they, you know, they're constantly cultivating and working with them to try and give them that life. And they have a strong sense of morality. And they're oriented towards their church in a lot of ways, but they also have kind of a live and let live morality at the same time.
Right. And the detached are people who, it's more of a hands-off parenting. We, of course, we have in-house sessions at UVA where we're trying to imagine what's the best way to represent these groups. And one thing that stood out that we didn't put into the report because we thought it inappropriate, but I can say it here, and that is that we thought Homer Simpson and the Simpson family kind of represented the detached, a caricature of it. And with the American Dreamers, there's a firm belief in institutions. These people are big believers in schooling and getting their kids on track and having them value their schooling, public schooling experience. And the detached, you know, they look at institutions and think of it as, you know, they're cynical and skeptical and tend to think, oh, those people are doing their own thing and they don't really care about my kid, and my kid could work for a long time. But, you know, if the stars cross in a certain way, they'd make it. Otherwise, they're probably not going to.
So as you've identified them again, these four different types of family cultures in America are the faithful, the engaged progressives, the detached, and the American dreamers. And there seems to be some geography differences for these groups, as well as some of the things that you've already described. Tell me about that.
Yes, I mean, one thing, when it's important that we're talking in general terms.
For example, the detached tend, according to your survey data, tend to be much more Republican and conservative, but some of them are Democrats.
Right.
The engaged progressives, which you say are sort of the mirror image, the flip side, tend to be much more liberal, and if they're in a party, tend to be Democrat, but they also include some Republicans and conservatives.
Exactly.
An example of the fact that there are some generalities that apply, but they're not total.
Right.
And then they apply.
And that's why when I was going to move to geography, I just want people to understand, if we say this group is primarily concentrated in these areas, that there are lots of all groups in every area. And for that matter, there were 13% of parents that we couldn't classify in any of these groups. So, you know, we're dealing with pretty broad brushstrokes here. But engaged progressives are disproportionately located in the mid-Atlantic states, in New England, and on the West Coast. And that's not surprising for people who have seen red versus blue breakouts of the U.S. map. The faithful, not surprisingly, are heavily concentrated in the South and in the Midwestern states. The detached and American dreamers are less defined in terms of a particular geographic region, although we can look at the fact that so many minorities are among the American dreamers, and you would have higher numbers of those in urban settings. So.
We should also point out, too, that when these four family groups were created, we didn't take into account issues of location, income, education. This was all done based on cultural variables. And then once we'd kind of established these, we stepped back and said, okay, now what are the demographics of these particular groups? So whether or not they lived in the Pacific Northwest or New England wasn't part of what factored into those,
right,
those classifications.
Carl Desportes-Bowman is Director of Survey Research at the University of Virginia's Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture. Megan Jules Swanson is a doctoral candidate in sociology who works at that institute. Both are among the researchers who have produced a new report titled The Culture of American Families. We're going to continue our discussion with them in just a bit more than 1 minute. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. So to you on the other side of your radio, if you've been listening for a bit, you now have some sense of the four different types of family cultures our guests have identified. Is any of this sounding familiar to you? Are there characteristics that seem to describe your family, attributes that fit another family you know? You're welcome to share your observations with us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. You can also reach us through Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Carl Bowman, going back to the first category that you mentioned, the faithful, in each of these groups, it strikes me in what I've read of your research, there are stereotypes confirmed, but there are also stereotypes defied. Mm-hmm. And one of the things is that you say about the detached, excuse me, about the faithful, if I find the right note I was going to look at, that while in many ways they tend to take a traditional conservative Christian view of family, they also told you that they think men should put their family before their career just as they think women should?
Yes. Many of these are conservative Christians, but they have a conviction that it's sort of a family first conviction, that whether it's the mother or the father, that everyone should focus upon the family, and that men need to do that as much as women do. So there's a sense of heavy involvement by both parents.
They also strongly reject the notion that mothers are more important in the raising of their kids. While they may be more inclined than some other groups to have stay-at-home moms, they reject the notion that mom is more important in the raising of the kids. Dad is just as important in the whole process.
Although they do accept role differences for men and women in a way that, say, the engaged progressives wouldn't. They believe that a woman should take time off, especially with preschool children, and stay at home with them. The father needs to be involved when he's at home, but he can't be involved in the same way. One of the things that's interesting is that the rate of staying at home and caring for children at home is about as high among engaged progressive mothers of preschool children as it is among faithful mothers of preschool children. They both stay at home. Even the progressive mothers do. The difference is, if you ask them, what is your job? The woman that's part of the faithful is likely to say, I'm a homemaker, and to identify herself vocationally in that way. And the mother from the engaged progressives is likely to cite some occupation that she's trained for or something that she plans to go back to after her children have reached a certain age. And so they're both at home. They just think of that reality differently.
First, we're going to Crozet. This is Bryce. Bryce, thanks for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment, please, for sociologists Carl Bowman and Megan Julius Swanson.
Hi, Carl and Megan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thank you.
I hear these four categories, and it sounds like all these parents are really thinking about the way that they parent their children. I'm wondering if you came across maybe an optional fifth category of parents who are not really making conscious decisions about the choices they make, or sometimes even blatantly incongruous decisions about the way that they parent their children.
I would say that we have that built into these four categories, actually, that one of the interesting things about the faithful and engaged progressives is, although they are far apart in terms of their worldview, their moral outlook, they are both heavily engaged in parenting and heavily involved. And American Dreamers are to a great extent, too, although they believe in experts and in letting schools do certain things. But the detached, that's not a group where the parents are as involved on a day-to-day basis and trying to orchestrate, you know, the development of the children. They have more of a fickle, chance, fatalistic view of what's going to happen to their kids, and it reflects in their parenting.
Is it an accurate takeaway from your research that one of the reasons might be that they're fairly pessimistic, that they seem to be saying that no matter what we do, it's not going to make much difference, the odds are stacked against us, so why get our hopes up?
Well, they haven't done that well themselves. I mean, they are lower socioeconomically than the other groups, and so they haven't had tremendous success. They probably feel like they haven't even had a lot of control over what they can achieve in their life and on their jobs, and they tend to have that same attitude vis-a-vis their children.
Bryce, such a terrific question. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going next to Harrisonburg. This is Jeff. Jeff, you're on Virginia Insight with sociologist Carl Bowman and Megan Juliff-Swanson. I bet you have a question.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'd just like to start out by saying I'm 29 years old with two children. I'm born and raised in Oregon, and I moved here to Virginia a few years ago. Now, I was listening to the four types of parenting styles, and I realized that there is a little bit of each one of those styles that really has fit the way I've chosen to raise my family and chosen to move forward. I don't necessarily see the conflict between faith and progressive. I think you can be both at the same time. And what parent wouldn't want their child to do better and have better opportunities, you know, than they've had before?
Well, both the faithful and engaged are very similar in that respect, in terms of wanting the best for their kids and being heavily invested in it. So they aren't.
But how they define best is different. I mean, one of the things that you say in your report is that among the faithful, raising children whose lives reflect God's purpose is a more important goal than so that their children are eventually happy or successful.
Exactly. And for engaged progressives, they're more likely to say, I want my children to be happy and to be successful, at least successful enough that they're happy about their vocational situation, too. So they're trying to do all the right things to provide those kinds of opportunities. So we did ask some questions, and you can come back. I'm not sure if we're getting to your question or not, but we did ask some questions where we asked people, which one of these trumps the other one? I mean, there was a set in the survey where they had to say, my purpose in parenting, and they had to say responses like raising children according to God's will. And then there was another one that said raising my children to be successful vocationally, or creating an environment that's warm and accepting where my child's self-esteem. And they had to rank these things, which is not an easy thing to do. As you're noting, most of us are somewhat interested in all of these things. So going into one of these categories as opposed to the other one is more a question of which way do you tip in balance rather than, you know, are you just solidly here and so that you therefore have none of the characteristics of the other groups?
And with the engaged American Dreamers, you know, this idea that they want their kids to do better. Yes, every parent wants their kids to do better than they have done. But the American Dreamers are very much I want my kid to get out of the projects. I want my kid to not have to struggle to make ends meet. And so it's a different sense of doing better than I just want my kids to do better than what I have done. It's a much greater sense of my kids are going to make it out of this life that we're living right now.
And many of those were minorities.
A lot of them were minorities or immigrants.
Mm-hmm. Jeff,
I've always felt that it would actually, I guess, a core value at the heart of that would almost be just respect and, you know, taking responsibility for oneself. And it seems like, you know, the child will have a part in shaping which direction they go, but based on those kind of core values, it will really take them and take the family in the way, you know, that it's going to organically go.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, we're thinking of culture broadly. I mean, we're thinking about the way members of the family talk to each other. So the faithful are distinguished in part by the fact that the environment that they're operating within in their families is one where they talk about faith, where they pray together at meals, where you know, their organizational involvements, church is at the center of it, and if they have problems, they're not going to go to a social worker or to a secular therapist. They're going to work it through their faith community and find a faith-based counselor and that kind of thing. So it's not that the basic desires of wanting their children to do well and to be responsible are so different as that these they do have different cultural realities within their families.
And they'll draw on different resources to try and accomplish what they want.
And yeah. Megan, since you were the one who did many of these face-to-face interviews with different families and parents across the country, let me ask you this, what I think is a follow-up to what Jeff was telling us. In the report that you and Carl and others published, one of the things that I noted that you were saying about the faithful is that it seemed to me, what I was reading into it, is that they feel like they have a lot to overcome because they report a belief that human nature is basically sinful. And mm-hmm. so they have to raise their children to try to resist that immorality that they see all around them. And what Carl has identified as the flip side group, the
Engaged Progressives.
The Engaged Progressives read a completely different view. They don't believe that human beings right. or society is basically sinful. And I guess I'm curious, Jeff, if you have a sense in saying that faith is important to you, if you would see yourself in either of those categories.
I honestly see myself as part of all categories. I am not necessarily one to just defy categories. I could see pursuing faith with a respect to all other faiths and all other ideas, progressive or strictly religious, and not being apathetic in the sense of letting the child just choose themselves, but at the same time have access to all sorts of information and experiences to really take their experience where they want to take it and doing the best I can as a parent to help them.
I'm going to be a little risky here, but as I hear your articulation of your understanding, I'm betting you would come into the engaged progressive category.
I would.
Yes.
I would, but I would not have any problem if, my son went to Bible college.
Oh, sure.
And, absolutely.
And that's the thing about these categories, when you're trying to talk about four groups like this, you have to sketch it broadly. But there are, there's a certain number of churchgoers among the engaged progressives. These are not the engaged progressives are not a group of permissivist parents who are, out of the 1960s and letting their children do whatever their children want to do. These are, as a matter of fact, most of the engaged progressives describe themselves as strict, more so than permissive anyway.
They don't report as do the faithful. The engaged progressives do not report that they see God's authority as the primary imperative for their family.
Exactly.
Exactly.
They as a matter of fact, they reject it. They tend to be, most of them are suspicious of religious groups and religious organizations, and as much as the faithful really embrace that. And their view of the world out there beyond their families is very different, because the engaged progressives have a more benign or hopeful understanding of our culture and the society that the children are growing up in. And many of the faithful feel themselves a bit under siege and want to create a safe harbor, an environment where their children can be grounded in God in a particular morality, not one that respects all moralities, but a particular morality. And actually, most of the faithful have great confidence that they are raising their children according to this different morality.
And the faithful in particular see it as their personal responsibility to help everyone that they know to live a more moral life. And so they are, they do have this kind of sense that their anchor, that their path is the correct path that they're following.
Jeff, thank you so very much for your call. We're going to go to Patricia and Stanton in just a moment, but I ought to mention for anybody who's just joined us that Carl Deport Bowman is Director of Survey Research at the University of Virginia's Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture. Megan Julefs Swanson is a doctoral candidate in sociology who works at that institute. Both are among the researchers who've produced this new report we're looking at. It is titled The Culture of American Families. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. By the way, we do have some phone lines open now, so if you call before and the lines were busy, this would be a good time to call back at 888-WMRA-TALK. Patricia, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Thank you. My frustration with the categories is this. Like an awful lot of Americans, when you see evangelical Protestantism and you hear the language of it, you identify that as religious. These people seem religious to you, and you even call them faithful. When you see progressive or non-evangelical Protestant versions of faith, non-conservative versions of religious traditions, you don't recognize it even as religious. So you lump those people together with secular people, and you say, if they don't want to send their kid to a religious therapist, to a Christian counselor, then they must be secular people. And that's simply, to me, not necessarily the case. So what you have done, I think, is you have done to progressive religious people, of whom there are many, exactly what the conservatives have always done to them, and that is to say, you're not really religious. You're really just secular. You really don't have the kind of deep religious beliefs or deep spiritual lives that we have because you don't use the language that we use and you don't organize your thoughts in quite the same way.
I didn't get your name. What is your name?
Patricia.
Patricia, yes, I understand your concern. believe me, I do. And I think that with the engaged progressives, we have people who are people of faith. Actually, one of the things we were trying to battle against a bit in this research is exactly what you're talking about. In the literature on parenting that tends to deal more in red versus blue, you often have it set up as just secular versus the people who care about morality and care about faith. And what we tried to do in this research, I'm not certain how well I'm communicating that to you, but what we tried to do in this research is to say, no, even among secular people, there is a strong moral orientation and moral interest. These aren't simply people who, oh, they're secular, they don't have understandings of good and bad and try to live very much within their understandings. They are people who their understanding, the engaged progressive, focus a lot on the golden rule, on respect for others, on tolerance. Many of them are involved with religious communities. And as we were writing, we really tried to emphasize that piece of it, that this is not what the faithful would want to call immorality. This is actually a moral orientation, and these people have things that they're deeply committed to.
Patricia, thank you so much for your great question. We have to pause for the break. We're going to continue with sociologist Carl Bowman and Megan Julefs Swanson and their new report about the culture of American families in just a bit more than 1 minute. Originally from Seattle, Washington, Megan Julefs Swanson has undergraduate degrees in both sociology and communications. She's about to add the letters PhD to her name based on work she's been doing at the University of Virginia. For many years, Carl Bowman served as chair of a college sociology department based only a few miles from where he grew up. That would be Bridgewater College, by the way. But for the past 4 years, he has headed up survey research at the University of Virginia's Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture. Ms. Julif Swanson and Dr. Bowman are among the co-authors of a new study on family culture in America. By the way, a link to that new report can be found on the Virginia Insight page at WMRA.org. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. You have something you want to say, Dr. Bowman.
Yes, I wanted to mention a couple of other individuals and persons that have worked with this project. Dr. James Davison Hunter has been the other project director, and he's executive director at the Institute, and it's been a privilege for us all to work with him on this project. And the project was funded by the Templeton Foundation, a very generous grant, and it helped fund the project over 3 years. And beyond that, our colleague Jeffrey Dill headed up the in-person interview portion of the study and authored the report out of the visits into the homes.
Okay, so now that we've got that taken care of, to you listening in, is it possible that you might be the exception that proves the rule? Did you grow up in a family dynamic completely different than anything you've heard described so far? 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. In all numbers, that's 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can post to us on Facebook, where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Next to Charlottesville, Stephanie, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Yes, thanks for having me on. I was curious about what the researchers would like to do with the study, having put the families into categories. What ultimately would you like to see done with your work?
Well, one of the things that we'd like to see done, we've done, and that is that we had a portion of the project that was oriented towards practitioners, as we called them. We had a conference in November in Washington, D.C., where we had leaders of government organizations, religious organizations, parenting organizations, some journalists, people from across the country coming in, but people who work more practically in the, you know, in the area of child development. And we presented findings to them and interacted with them at a conference there. We have distributed approximately 300 copies of the report to people in very practical, hands-on organizations nationwide, as well as scholars at universities. You know, when in those conversations in Washington, one of the things that came up was language, that each of these four groups we've been talking about really speak different languages. They tend to frame things in different ways, and that experts and people who are trying to work in very constructive ways with children need to have a sense for what the family culture is that the children are coming out of so they can speak a language that makes sense to those parents.
We also found, too, as we were doing some of these interviews, that when you go into these homes, parents may use the same language but may mean very, very different things by it. So, for example, we were talking with parents about this idea of thinking for yourself, and the vast majority of parents want kids to think for themselves. But when you start asking them, okay, unpack that for me, tell me what it is that you mean by this, you know, a quarter of parents were like, well, you know, I want my kid to be completely independent. I want them to set their own direction. I want them to be the, you know, the master of their own fate. And then three quarters of parents were like, no, I want my kid to stay out of trouble. I want them to think for themselves, which means to me, following the morality that I have given them, this is the way you're supposed to do and to resist peer
pressure.
So
if my child's thinking for himself, he's thinking like me.
Exactly.
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 Right.
It almost becomes a new way of talking about obedience, right? That thinking for yourself means you will do what I as the parent have laid out for you, especially when you go out into the world, right? When you go out to school, thinking for yourself means thinking like I as a parent would want you to think at home. And so giving these practitioners this kind of sense of the different language, or when they use the same language, how it means different things, becomes very practical and very real for these practitioners.
If I could tag this on to Stephanie's question, of these four groups that you've identified, the detached, the faithful, the engaged progressives, and the American dreamers, do you have reason to have any sense of worry or concern most about children in any one of those groups?
Well, for instance, the children, the detached families and American Dreamers families, those generally struggle more economically in our country. And one of the concerns is that children from the American Dreamers might be pulled into a culture of the detached. And there are many more school problems among children in the detached, fights, things like that.
And so in identifying these groups and in identifying these attitudes among parents, do you have a sense that this might help those who want to help children to know that there are certain kinds of philosophy of family out there in America?
Oh, certainly. I think educators and school administrators know some of these things intuitively. But for instance, when you're dealing with a family and they come in and there's a child in your office that has a problem, you need to know whether they're from the faithful or engaged progressives, or at least have a sense for the cultural world that they inhabit there, because you need to speak with them differently if you're going to influence them.
Stephanie, thanks so much for your call. We're going next to Harrisonburg. Joe, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please, for sociologists Megan Julius-Swanson and or Carl Bowman.
Hello, I probably know Carl Bowman.
Well,
George Bowman, at least.
We'll let you talk anyway.
All right. I'm retired. I taught over here at James Madison.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed to me that, you know, you can put down four categories of people and define them and then and sort them so that everybody falls into some bin or other. But I think it's my impression first that if you actually then take those people and say, does this apply to you? You'll find that a substantial majority actually say, no, it doesn't really apply to me. And then secondly, people change as they grow older. For instance, there's a woman in our newspaper who writes that column called Yankee Doodle, and then she started out as an out-and-out rebel, and by the time she got into probably late middle age, I never really met her, she was a very committed Christian. People change as they get older. I started out as agnostic, and now I would be, probably shocking to a lot of people. But there's both a category of people changing as they grow old, and then also people who really don't fit in, that maybe four categories are too small.
Well, and thank you so much for that, because, we need to, I mean, the interesting thing here was we weren't just trying to lump everybody together and say the American family is this and the American family is that. But whenever you break them out, that's going to be a simplification of very complex patterns that are out mm-hmm. there. This is based on data from one point in time. You can't project it across time. People change, as you say. And so we didn't classify everyone, even among the people that we surveyed. It didn't work for everyone.
Well, and two, in my experience of going into people's homes and sitting at their dining room tables or sitting around their living rooms, there are a number of people that we talked to that you really did get the sense that they were, that they were works in progress or that they were evolving. You know, parents that had almost like two families. They've got two kids that are quite a bit older, and then they have, the oops child that's 10 or 15 years behind the other two, and they can talk about the ways in which they parent these two children very differently at different times. But on some level, their cultural orientations don't necessarily change that much. And, you were talking to Joe about the fact that not everyone, people would seem to reject these labels that, oh, well, that doesn't really apply to me. But having been in a lot of these homes, you can definitely get the sense of the ways in which these parents relate, the ways in which these parents interact. You know, in the homes of the faithful, they have listed on their wall, these are the Bible verses that you need to memorize this week. This is the checklist of who's actually memorized them and who hasn't. We're sitting with parents that have now been classified as the detached because the classifications came after the interviews. You're sitting with this parent and this parent's like, well, I guess I love my kids. Maybe I should tell them that a little more often. And so you really did get the sense that the whole household, the whole culture, the whole, like even down to what was on the walls, seemed to reflect these kind of cultural and moral orientations.
You raise a question that makes me think if we could actually go back to all these people, which we can't because it was an anonymous survey, but if we could go back to them and ask them with these categories and a little narrative description of each, which are you? I bet for many among the faithful, they would pick that
category. They would claim it with pride. Yeah.
And I think for many in the engaged progressive camp, they would claim that too. They might say, oh, I'm a little of each. Well, okay, if you had to pick one, I think they would pick that.
Yeah.
I think few would pick the category detached. They would want to be in one of the other
categories.
They
don't want to be Homer Simpson.
And, you know, I'm not sure about American Dreamers, but I know that there is a real strong belief in America among many of our ethnic minorities and a belief that if you just study hard and work hard, you can get ahead.
Joe, thanks so much for your call. A new take on family dynamics is our focus. 888-WMRA. Talk is our phone number, and we've got just a few more minutes to take calls. So if you've got a question that you have not yet heard addressed or a personal experience related to our topic that you'd be willing to share, please do call us at 888-967-2825 or post to us on the Facebook page where we're listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. That was the route Carolyn chose, and she says, I'm wondering what type of culture encourages families to have children and what type encourages people to stay single and or childless. Also, can cultures change over generations?
I would say that cultures definitely can change over generations. One of the things that we asked parents when we were sitting in their homes is reflect on your child and your upbringing and how your parents raised you and the ways in which you're raising your children. And while the vast majority of parents said, yeah, there were some really great things about my childhood, a lot of them are very intentionally going about parenting their kids or parenting their families in different ways. So maybe it's more faith-oriented than they saw their parents as being, but a lot of them are much more engaged. They want to, you know, they want to have a close, intimate connection with their kids. They want to be there and be able to talk through everything and, you know, be less stern and less distant. So I think that there definitely can be a generational shift.
And Megan's comment that, that, you know, that there's a change over time leads me to think about one other major finding here. And that was we went into this. And there's talk all the time in the media and in books about families in crisis and the sad state of the American family. And one of our findings in the study was that many parents will echo that if they're talking about the state of the family in general or how hard it is to raise families today, those kinds of statements. But if you ask them about their own family, you'd think the family in America is doing beautifully. Parents are so positive about their families, about their kids. They talk about minimal levels of argumentation. They talk about their kids doing well in school. Their kids are not having sexual relations with other people. They're not drinking alcohol. It's a very rosy picture you get from parents when they talk about their own kids. It may not be reality, mind you, but it is the way parents think about their families.
I think we may only have time for one more call, but we'll get to as many of these people waiting as we can. Next to Stanton, Laura, thanks for joining us. If you could make your question quick, that'd be a big help.
I'm an eighth grade teacher, and I'm curious how it takes a whole village, but how do we get our kids whose parents don't care about education for our kids to care about education?
If I had the answer to that question, and that is one of the real problems here, you know, and it's echoed in these four groups. If you have a large set of parents, and 20% of our parents here were among the detached who just kind of throw up their hands and feel like you really can't do anything about, you know, how Junior turns out anyway, that there's very little we can do about this. How can you teach that child otherwise at school? And
right.
And how will the parents view it even if the child starts to believe in the school and to have a faith in teachers and the institution that the parents don't share? It's a real quandary, yes.
I wish I had an answer for you on that as well. I think one thing that came through, at least in the interviews with American Dreamer parents, is they are committed. They want their kids to have that education, but they're not always quite sure how to go about doing that, and they're not always quite sure how to interact with the institutions of the schools. So sometimes it may be that they want to help their kids, but somehow the cultural translation process isn't quite happening the way that we would hope that it would be happening.
Many, many of our parents are very committed and very engaged and working with the schools. So I would say that's the larger picture that we saw. But
one of the other things, though, is that the degree to which people define what's good as differently, you have the faithful in your surveys saying that they have kind of a low level of trust of public education. They prefer sending their kids to private schools whenever possible or homeschooling. And you have the engaged progressive saying pretty much the opposite. They think public education is wonderful and they have high hopes for their children's achievements.
As do American dreamers. Yes.
Yeah, Laura, thank you so much for your call. I'm sorry that we are out of time, but I'm glad we got your question in before we had to go. Our guests have been sociologists Carl Dayport Bowman and Megan Julifs Swanson, both from the Institute for Advanced Studies in Culture based at the University of Virginia. The new study they helped create is titled The Culture of American Families. Megan, Carl, thank you both so much for making
time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Virginia Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Associate producers Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our great break music supplied by Robert Jaspe and Inner Rhythm. You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. When you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about both of our guests and their new study. Thank you for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.